Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com.
Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Paul or Nothing, the place to get all your Paul all of the time. Bit of a little unscheduled aside here today, folks. It's going to be hopefully released just during the festive period. This is Christmas Eve at the time of recording. I've already had my morning Christmas cocktail, so I'm a little bit loose. I'm ready to get some Paul out there for you today. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to get Venus and Mars out before Christmas, but I did want to give you something for the festive season. And the thing about podcasting is it can kind of just get in your skin, really. You know, it worms its way into your everyday life. And acting on that emotion, I've decided to get this mini episode out for you here today. It's going to be a bit of a fun exercise, really. It's going to be rather like John Lennon's song, Instant Karma, where I'm going to write. Yes, this show is actually written. Record, edit, and release this podcast all within a 24-hour period. If this goes well, I hope to include a few more like this. Try and get things that I can't get into an episode or one of these fabled articles on the blog that I keep plugging and never delivering. I promise those are coming soon. But yeah, anything that might be a bit too niche or singular, this might be the best way to tackle it. Anyway, why am I here? Well, because it's Christmas time, of course. It's that special time of the year where we all bend to the shameless will of consumerism and get absolutely hammered, mostly the latter. Yes, I love Christmas, but I'm also a fan of cheesy Christmas music. And if there was a man who was ever to succeed in writing a cheesy Christmas song, it was going to be Paul McCartney. Yes, this is kind of somewhat of a pandering Christmas episode of a show, but what the hell? It's a song that I wanted to cover. It's quirky enough to deserve its own mini episode. And that song, as I'm sure you've guessed by now, is Paul's 1979 Christmas classic, or flop, depending on which side of the fence you're on, Wonderful Christmas Time. Quick couple of plugs before we start. Please get in contact with the show. I really enjoyed reading out Rob Stevenson's email on the last episode. It was just so wonderfully eloquent, and it's a tradition I hope to continue. So if you like the show, if you feel like you have anything unique to add or interesting, or you just want to tell me how barefaced wrong I am, please send us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Then you can also find us on the Twitter, which is @McCartneyPod, as I'm sure you all know by now. Check out the Work in Progress blog at www.wordpress.com. And please, if you have a spare 30 seconds, please take that time to log on and give us an iTunes review, as they are quite simply the best way to help the show grow and reach a much wider audience than we would normally be able to reach otherwise. But the main thing I want to talk about, is my first ever appearance on another creator's podcast. Yes, we're branching out. I think we have sprinkles of success in the air. By the time this episode will be released, you will also be able to find me on episode 36 of the See Here podcast, which is hosted by my insanely knowledgeable and supportive friend, Maurice Burr. Okay, I'm not going to pronounce his second name, as he's never actually bothered to tell me how it's pronounced. It's a podcast that I bi-monthly fall in love with, where Maurice and his... it might be Morris. Again, I'm not entirely sure. He's never bothered to point it out. And his cohort of co-hosts focus on movies with a close link to music. No, it's not a podcast about musicals per se, but about music movies, where they dissect and analyse each feature with a fine-tooth comb. Previous episodes I've enjoyed are ones that where they tackled Love and Mercy, Little Shop of Horrors, and All Night Long. It's safe to say that it's one of those podcasts where I just feel the quality of conversation and the amount of interesting points they bring up is seemingly endless. Like I say, I'll be joining them for their 36th episode where we will be discussing the seminal 1968 animated film Yellow Submarine, which follows the adventures of a certain band as they travel through Pepperland in the titular vehicle. Recording the episode was a blast, and they really made me feel welcome, and more importantly, fostered this kind of friendly, non-work-like atmosphere that really got the best out of everyone. Seriously, if you guys knew how many takes I did per episode and how much editing I do, you'd know that it really is more like work. Now, I'm not saying I'm the highlight of the episode, But the episode is definitely the highlight of their whole podcast. So please check us out. Check me out on episode 36 of the See Here podcast. You are able to find the show on all good podcasting sites as well as YouTube. Yeah, you know where to find it. Just type in See Here, and that's Here with H-E-A-R. Speaking of See Here, it was in fact the host, Maurice, who semi-inspired the episode you're listening to right now when he casually sent me an article on Salon.com with a title that read, In Defense of Wonderful Christmas Time. And when I first saw this title, I was a little perplexed. In defense of, I thought, with a sense of slight confusion. Why does this article even exist? It's not like there's a tide of anti-Wonderful Christmas Time sentiment going around the interwebs, is there? Oh, how naive I was. So, after a little digging across the net, it turns out that over the last couple of years, the song that I wanted to make a little cheesy, corny 5-minute Christmas special on, about a little cheesy, corny Christmas song, and now I'm kind of thrown on the back foot as I have to defend a song that I would normally describe as inhabiting the upper regions of mediocrity, but in light of this unprecedented vitriol and bile that has been unexpectedly projected towards it, I just had to respond in kind. And yeah, fuck you, Maurice, you have lost me an additional 4 hours of my week. Now, I'm a guy who has worked in a couple of professions now where I'm not in control of the music that has been played in the work area. So every December, it's an inevitable fact that the slew of Christmas song compilations will start playing, and Wonderful Christmas Time will undoubtedly be in the smack bang in the middle of those songs, as well as included in any gratuitous top 50 Christmas songs of all time countdowns you'd like to see on Channel 4. And amidst these songs, at least until I started to read these articles, I felt that Wonderful Christmas Time fit rather snugly between them. It's a very innocent and homely little track that honestly I never thought could raise any impassioned views from anyone, let alone all these people. I mean, Christ, between 2010 and now, I've cited at least 15 articles on this topic alone, and I wonder where all the interest, or lack of, has really come from. Now, call me an old skeptic, but I'm struggling to see the sincerity in a lot of these posts and the opinions expressed therein. The articles I'm about to delve into are, as I'm well aware of, not exactly the New York Times, the Guardian, the Washington Post. These are grubby little internet articles that are, at the end of the day, seeking one thing and one thing only, views and clicks. The more views and clicks an article gets online, the more advertising revenue it may rake in. And the centre of this bullshit clickbait-centric world is going to linger over this episode like a bad black mold infestation. So first of all, where has all this come from? It seems like the hate from the haters for this song started in about 2011, and the article seemed to have gotten reasonable traffic, especially around the holiday seasons, both from the draw of holiday-based articles in general and the Googleability of the McCartney brand. Other writers caught wind of this, especially ones who may not be particularly inventive writers or well-versed in Christmas songs, and took it off from there. It's an easy topic to write about. It's an easy song to bash if you don't know what you're talking about, regurgitating the same opinions over and over and over until it's just become part of the zeitgeist. I mean, how many people really hate this song? I mean, actually dislike it? Or do they just know that other people have been told in kind that they don't like the song, and therefore everyone thinks everyone doesn't like the song, so it's just this echo chamber where everyone thinks this is a bad song, but no one's actually taking the time to actually listen to it or make their own opinions, just so some asshole can make another $15 from their Netflix subscription sidebar advertisement on their website. Okay, I know this sounds a little unnecessarily paranoid, but I have a feeling deep inside me that there may be some people, in true Sony Pictures fashion, that may be being paid by those with deep anti-McCartney sentiments to basically just shit all over this song. I mean, where else could this resentment spring from? Yeah, I know synth is tacky, but this is just taking it a little too far, don't you think? Or I could have this completely wrong. It could just be an easy, my first little children's bad Christmas song poster boy used to divert us away from other worse Christmas tragedies. Who knows? I mean, we do live in a world with Boney M's Mary's Boy Child, and I can't believe people don't write 20 articles about that one. But anyway, let's jump right into the mire that is this mess. Oh, and one last thing. I was planning on posting links to all of these articles, but I'm a little reluctant to give them any more attention than they deserve, and I am a lazy bastard at times. So, first of all, we have a wonderfully stupid contribution from ClassicRock.com. Okay, ClassicRock.com. These are part of the establishment. I'm going to guess that there's going to be some erudite and clever and witty opinions that are well-balanced and put on display in a very digestible manner. In this article, contributor and shit stirrer Matt Springer described Wonderful Christmas Time as an abysmal seasonal horror, and that Revolution 9 is a better Beatles Christmas song than Wonderful Christmas Time. Now, I know I can tend to lean on the crutch of outrage if a review is going a little stale for me, but that will be in the depths of a full album review, amidst many songs and amidst many other song reviews, if I do say so myself, where here it just seems to be an attempt to feign hatred over something that is so mild that his hyperbole trickles into parody of music journalism. But you have to remember, kids, middle of the road or neither here nor there reviews that don't come down incredibly hard on either side do not sell and do not generate clicks. It's essentially an article of cheap shots and easy observations, like he rags on the synthy sound without explaining specifically why it's bad. Again, he's under the general assumption that pop culture agrees that synths suck. Has he not seen the opening credits to Stranger Things? Then he sets McCartney's overuse of repetition squarely within his sights, and, you know, having a go at Paul McCartney for repetition is like having a go at him for breathing. It's what he does, and he's used it to extreme success in many songs, but you're not picking him out on that, are you? And, you know, that kind of criticism's come about, what, 20 to 25 years too late? Fuck this, guys, move on. Who's next? We have Chris Chase's little article for USA Today. This one's a little interesting because not only does he try to prove one ridiculous claim, but two, as he tries to simultaneously go after this song and Happy Christmas, War is Over. Now, again, I don't want to spend too much time on this guy, but the main problem with me for him was that he literally wrote nothing. He makes like this kind of like a top 10 format, bullet points, so he's going to make it sharp and snappy, but half the points, probably more than half points, have literally nothing to do with the song. I think at one point he goes after the lyrics, but doesn't explain why the lyrics are bad. He doesn't explain why the lyrics for Happy Xmas are bad. He says, like, oh, they're the Beatles. They should do better. Why should they do better? What is your actual point? And then he's like, oh, both songs have saccharine grammatical errors in their titles that scream artiste. Okay, yes, there is no such word as Christmas Time or Xmas, really, but what's that got to do with how good the actual song is? Yeah, 50 Shades of Grey is a bad book, but I don't think anyone said it's a bad book based on the title. It's a completely empty criticism. Then another point he goes on to make is, oh, there have been terrible covers of these songs as well. Like, oh no, the Bare Naked Ladies and Hilary Duff have covered these songs. Okay, what's that got to do with reviewing the actual song as a piece of critical music journalism? Oh wait, he's literally clawing. He's like a little cat pawing at a piece of yarn but getting no grip. I'm tempted to say this is the worst thing on here, but we will get to the worst one later. I really wish he'd written more just so I could continue having a pop at him, but genuinely, this is the real nadir of music journalism. It's such a fluffy, poppy, non-piece of writing that it just makes you wonder who was the editor for this? Who let this pass? I mean, I've seen things on BuzzFeed with more substance to them. Next in the line is a submission from popcultureaddict.com. First off, this guy goes and does something so infuriating that I struggle to put it into words, and it's something a lot of hacky writers, including myself in previous episodes, do. And that is to try and set up a false hypothesis in an attempt to justify his over-the-top, libelous review by starting off with, I'm not a man who hates Paul McCartney. In fact, the majority of my favourite Beatles songs were written by Paul. Heck, I even like Wings. Okay, I get it. He's saying that he's such a Macca fan that whatever is said next is automatically measured and fair. But he goes on to say the following. And no, I am not making up any of this. This guy, for a publication, actually wrote this as a serious review and expects you to take it as such. He says, to this day, I cannot listen to Wonderful Christmas Time without having violent reactions. I have been walking through many grocery stores and will hear that awful synth start to chime and double over with a terrible moan of anguish, alarming shoppers around me. I have had to leave department stores that persist on playing it. I have even been tempted to drive into the other lane, ending my life when it has come on the car radio. Yes, folks, you actually heard all of that. And for me to comment any further on this drivel, this absolute bottom point of human achievement in writing, would be an insult to this podcast and a waste of your time. Then we have a little snippet from the ever reputable Jezebel.com. Now, I'm not going to spend too long on the ramblings of contributor Erin Gloria Ryan and her quest to find the worst Christmas song ever, mostly because I don't need to. Just this one quote is enough to sum up everything about her, her integrity as a quote-unquote journalist, and her ability to write on a keyboard. Wonderful Christmas Time is manic, stupid, and overstimulating, while simultaneously leaving the listener wondering if anything at all has meaning. If Ringo Starr ever made a Christmas song, we're all doomed. Now, what Erin may have found out if she'd even bothered to do anything as easy as a basic Google search, she would have known that not only did Ringo indeed release a Christmas song, but he recorded the whole fucking Christmas album. It was called I Wanna Be Santa Claus, and it was so fucking abysmal that Ringo dropped the record label he recorded it with. But yeah, thank you Jezebel.com for that insightful review on a very fun classic Christmas song. Then we come to the College Humour video. Okay, folks, this is where I have to be honest with you for a moment, as I'm often inclined to do, as I'd like to think, on this podcast. We have already talked about a lot of bollocks on this episode right now, far more than I ever intended. But I have to confess that without this next entry, I may never even have bothered with this rant at all. But all of these senseless bashings directed towards Paul are all systemically interconnected in their bullshit, culminating in one of the least funny, least insightful, poorly executed, lazily filmed, and all-around tragically bad pieces of content ever put out by College Humour ever. And that's saying something. So what exactly is this video anyway that's got me so fired up? Well, in typical slobbish YouTuber fashion, the video simply consists of two reasonably talented actors stood in front of a camera with a green screen background behind them, stringing together a series of poorly thought out, laughless observations in an attempt to fill up 3 minutes worth of a clickbait title video, slap that shit together one afternoon and get 3 million views no problem. Hashtag not bitterly jealous about those ratings at all. The depths of bottom barrel scraping that these two meta hacks will seemingly go knows no bound, at least as far as this video is concerned. Despite being all around wrong in their confusions, the worst part of it all is that they offer nothing to back it up. The criticisms seem plucked out of thin air and horrendously forced, and I mean really forced. There is nothing to suggest that these two even know anything about Paul McCartney, his music, or that they've even been exposed to the song prior to this video being made. It's like the title came first from their marketing department, and the points and criticism came second. And just like all the other awful we have to deal with, there's just no attempt to do an honest-to-God general critique of the song. I'm sure that if I had a bad day and I was forced to review this song, I could make many negative points about it. Not that I'm tooting my own horn or anything, but I'd like to think that I'd give it a fair stab. Now, I hear you saying, but Sam, you talented, handsome and brilliant podcast host, you moan about a song for much longer than these guys ever did, with even worse humour. Well, yeah, I do, but, you know, like I said earlier, it's part of a wider narrative. I don't just come out with a random YouTube video called Why When the Night is the Worst Song off Red Rose Speedway and cash in on the views, because believe me, if I could, I would. Oh, I'd sell out instantly. Now, again, for the sake of full transparency, I'm actually a big fan of the majority of what College Humour put out, especially the confidently produced Adam Ruins Everything series, of whom the star features in this tripe piece of poo video. But despite this talent, you know, in front of the camera, behind the camera, for some reason, this video feels like something from Cracked.com in 2002, or a late-night high school comedy improv group flailing for punchlines that just never land. I genuinely can't believe that this passes, or, you know, did pass for entertainment. I don't not find it funny because it's bashing a song or an artist that I like. I don't find it funny because it's fundamentally not funny. What it is a desperate, clawing attempt at trying to pick a comedy music review and failing tremendously on both fronts. It is unbearably cringy the first, second and third time you watch it. Seriously, folks, there is a reason you cannot find this video easily on the College Humour website. Though I did find a couple of articles that did indeed defend this song, including the original Salon article that Maurice Maurice sent me, but there's one that stood out to me as a little piece. But there was one little piece that stood out to me from newsobserver.com by Barry Saunders, and I just had to read out this quote as it almost perfectly sums up everything I feel about the haters and the critics of this song. He says, "Consolation can be found in knowing that people who hate Wonderful Christmas Time are probably music snobs. People who've determined that every song's message must be couched in symbolism or importance and must take at least 2 months to produce." Another point, or more importantly, point of comparison we also have to make, we have to inevitably make, is the counterpart to McCartney and McCartney's song. The song of which I'm referring to, again, you probably guessed, is John Lennon's own Happy Xmas, War Is Over. Are you supposed to say Happy Christmas, or are you supposed to say Happy Xmas? I don't know. To call this song the complete antithesis of Wonderful Christmas Time is a bit of an understatement. But, as we will soon discuss, it's not exactly a comparison match made in heaven. Part of me feels that between, you know, like 1950 and maybe as late as the early 2000s, the Christmas number one has been a staple of the modern pop music zeitgeist. But odds are, it was simply viewed by Lennon as the best way to spread his anti-war peace message as fast as he could to the widest possible audience. And on top of that, it may simply have been just another writing exercise mountain for him to climb and conquer. Now, something I would first like to point out is that Lennon's song came out in 1971, at the height of the Leninist world peace movement, and the song reflects that period perfectly, much in the same way it reflects the singer who sings it. The classically pessimistic downer John does not give us a song about mistletoe and rye, but a stark reflection about how the majority of people outside the Western world might not actually be having such a nice Christmas, a full fucking 13 years before Bob Wanker Tosser Geldof did the exact same thing. It's one of the perfect anti-war anthems, and maybe the only seasonal one, now that I think about it, and it sets up the perfect yin foundations for McCartney to reply in kind and build upon his own yang. People and clickbait article writers all over, as Barry Saunders also points out, mention that Wonderful Christmas Time sounds like it was written in 5 minutes. And I personally feel like this is a very simplistic and short-sighted, just overly negative opinion and interpretation of the lyricism in this track. Maybe if these guys had taken 5 minutes away from retweeting and posting photos of their new pug on Instagram, that maybe, just maybe, they would have had time to think, hey, maybe McCartney didn't want to write Hamlet for his cheerful Christmas ditty. But obviously they didn't, so they couldn't. And I am pretty sure that McCartney was very well aware of the serious tonal precedent set by Happy Xmas, War Is Over, and knew that any attempt to do something vaguely in the same ballpark, whether that be sound, subject matter, tone, or execution, would mean his own song would be instantly compared, shot down, and forgotten about in an instant. No, Paul decided to do what he does oh so consistently best. And that was to do something different. Of course, he could never do anything as deep or as somber. So what did he do instead? Well, you know, I've already said, Wonderful Christmas Time is the antithesis of Happy Xmas, War Is Over. So that's a clue. Paul's song is a brilliant contrast to Lennon's worldly track, as it's a song that solely focuses about Christmas within one's own home, under one's own roof. Now, that's not to say it's a blind or ignorant track, just that it has entirely different priorities. It's a song that extols the simple pleasures of the world. It's about appreciation for what you have in a positive light. The joys of family, of coming together and spending time with each other. It's upbeat to the point of mawkish sentimentality. But it's a wholly innocent affair that does not burden itself with the weight of the world's problems and focuses solely on the good in the world. McCartney responded to Lennon with his own optimistic, light-hearted affair that never had to worry about the misplaced loftier heights that his critics claim it failed to achieve, because it was never trying to achieve them in the first place. It's very much like the song Getting Better. McCartney's the happy one, Lennon's the sad one. So what the hell do I think about this song anyway? You know, now like we've said before, ever since Yesterday and Penny Lane, McCartney always seems to be mistaken for some Shaolin monk-level songwriter lyricist extraordinaire. And this misappropriation has spilled over onto the opinions surrounding Wonderful Christmas Time, and this is probably where most of the flack comes from. Look, this is a good song, okay? It still wouldn't be here if it wasn't. Yes, we are all aware of the Crazy Frog or the Cheeky Girls, Rebecca Black or Nickelback, but they just don't get the airplay. The reason this song continues to stalk the airwaves is because it strikes enough of a chord with enough of the population to make a difference. I am confident when I call this one a crowd pleaser and that I am deep within said crowd. No, I did not call this my favourite Christmas song. Unfortunately for me, that spot goes to the awfully syrupy Stop the Cavalry by Jonah Louie. But swiftly moving on, to me, it's Wonderful Christmas Time is a wonderfully homely and quaint song that exemplifies what it means to be with your family under one roof, getting a little bit drunk, a little bit loud, and just having fun with everyone together. Despite its futuristic electronic Doctor Who sound, it still has the ability to evoke a very classical Christmassy mood and everything that it goes with. For me, it perfectly embodies the spirit of a small British Christmas. Perhaps this very specific sound and feel and subject matter was too niche on McCartney's part to transition abroad to a wider commercial market successfully. But Whenever I hear it, I feel warm, I feel at home, and I feel like a lot of alcohol is on the way. I personally love the chorus's melody, both vocal and instrumental. And I know a lot of people, you know, when they bring up this point, feel like the Wonderful Christmas Time part of the chorus feels a little bit rushed or forced or doesn't flow right. But personally, I have never felt this, and the general flow of the melody, whilst not exactly rolling off the tongue, consistently reaches a satisfying peak every time I sing it. It's very much like songs like Maybe I'm Amazed or 1985 or The Backseat of My Car, where Paul brings us down purely just to bring us back up again. It's a roller coaster ride of a song, but it's a very laid back one. You know, it's the holidays, we're not meaning to go mad, but it's still nice to have the journey. And on the subject matter of whether Paul repeats the chorus too much, you know, on these peaks and troughs, depends entirely whether you're gratified in singing the chorus to begin with, and I am, so I don't mind at all. Lyrically, it's perfectly succinct and saccharine for the type of Christmas song that I like to listen to. No, he didn't write this in 10 minutes, it is intentionally simplistic. Now that isn't just me being a McCartney wanker apologist. To me, McCartney's brevity in this song is entirely commendable, as he conjures up effortlessly so many images of the family Christmas party in hardly any words at all. He leaves it to you, the listener, to fill in the blanks of the specific happenings of the occasion, and he is far more concerned with the emotion and the vibe of it all. So, as these oft-mentioned synth sounds allude to, this was recorded and performed entirely by McCartney during his solo, almost hermit-esque recording sessions for his second solo album, McCartney 2, which is when he began experimenting with these electronic sounds and track loops and integrating them into his ever-changing sound, just like adding another limb. It perfectly encapsulates these sessions with its simplistically sparse atmosphere and its quirky, if somewhat grating for some, wet electronica sound, which I personally fell in love with. It's so simple and so bare bones, and yet contains this kind of complexity through its electronic expression. It was really ahead of its time in many ways, pioneering the path for the 80s with other artists like Gary Numan or The Buggles into the age of unnatural soundscapes. Though this really was and truly the first solo McCartney recording to be released since his debut record, it's rather interesting to point out that the marketing for this track was muddled, to say the least. Whilst it was definitely a McCartney solo song, he wasn't alone in promoting it, having Wings not only perform the show on their last ever tour, but to have the gall to even ask them to appear in the music video for the song, just on the eve of them breaking up. It's so oddly sad to see Steve Holly and Lawrence Juber in the background of the music video that is the swan song of their own demise, even after just being on one Wings album. The cover for the single, however, is probably the only part of the package where I feel like the criticism has missed the mark and has been all but too light. The image of McCartney paying homage to Bing Crosby on the front cover looks absolutely awful with its poor, pixelated look and sickly holiday snot green packaging. I think something a little more classic would have sufficed, Paul. All in all, though, the song never did as well as its reputation may suggest, only reaching number 6 in the UK charts before swiftly fading away after the holidays. Though now it's a staple of the season, appearing in all supermarkets, on all TV screens, radio stations, and even in a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer film. One industry source puts the annual royalties attributed to McCartney for this song at being somewhere in the region of $400,000 to $600,000 a year. This means McCartney has earned about $15 million from the song since its release. This one song earns just a little bit less than what McCartney earns in a year from all the other royalties from the songs by him and Wings. So that means this one crappy little Christmas song that apparently no one likes makes almost as much money as Hey Jude, Jet and Let It Be. How is this hated so much? And why does this song, despite all this batshit hack critic backlash, seem to be so enduring and long-lasting in our culture? Why does this song continually make money? Entertainment attorney Bernie Resnick explains the situation as thus. The song is what we in the industry call an evergreen, because it gets played all the time. McCartney's publishing royalty check every fourth quarter probably has a lot of zeros on the end. If you listen to Frosty the Snowman, it sounds like it's from another century. Wonderful Christmas Time doesn't. It doesn't sound dated, and it's more than 30 years old. McCartney was smart because not only did he write and record the song himself, but he created a song that will stand the test of time. So, there we are, folks. That was intended to be a 5-minute little digression about Wonderful Christmas Time, and now it's turned into a rant that's lasted well over 25 minutes and spanned 9 A4 pages worth of notes. Whew. Well, I'm not sure it was worth it, but either way, I hope listening to me endlessly bitch was a good enough way for you to spend your Christmas break. But before I go, I thought I'd point out around 10 minutes before I actually started recording this episode, I just found a slightly cringeworthy little skit from the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Jimmy Kimmel, an American talk show host, not exactly up there with Conan and Letterman, But anyway, I digress. He was doing this little a cappella cover of this track with his band. All of his hosts seem to have a band for some reason. Now, you know, this would be a little cool song. It has Scarlett Johansson, Reese Witherspoon, and even Matthew McConaughey making appearances doing, you know, several of the a cappella instruments. But what sends it downhill is the appearance of several cartoon CGI animals that are featuring in the new god-awful-looking movie Sing by the people who did Despicable Me, which is basically X Factor meets American Idol the movie, basically just turning it into one big advertisement at McCartney's expense. So that's great, I suppose. Yeah, it was terrible. Don't watch it. Don't give that views either. I'm sure, as per usual, the closing music is already beginning to play us out, so all I can say is have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, an extra special Kwanzaa for everyone here at Port or Nothing. And if I don't see you again, have a Happy New Year too. And for fuck's sake, let's have a better 2017 than we have this year. Peace! Oh, and by the way, Rogue One sucked major donkey dick.